Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. My very special guest today is Michael Bleuler. Michael has had a number of Sasquatch and UFO experiences, and his story really resonates with me because he knows from personal experience that not only does certain types of Sasquatch have an interdimensional metaphysical capability, but by extension, we do as well, because we are multidimensional beings. Despite all these efforts to dumb us down and lock us into this left brain thinking, we are multidimensional infinity, as some people have described this. So there is a symbiotic relationship between us and certain other races, species, including the Sasquatch. So without any further ado, Michael Bleuler, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Michael, tell us about your voyage of discovery. Tell us a bit about yourself and how you came to be doing this kind of work.
My name's Michael Bleuler. I'm from Biloxi, Mississippi, southeastern United States. I'm about a mile from the Gulf of Mexico. Avid hunter, avid fisherman. Before any of this happened to me, I just want to let everybody know. It wasn't that I wasn't a believer in the paranormal and stuff like that. It just was never on my radar. I did 13 and a half years in the US Army with the 101st Airborne. I did four tours in Iraq and got hurt and had to come back home. And that pretty much finished my career in the military. So I pretty much just stuck to what I grew up on, always in the woods all the time, hunting. I do have a daughter. She's 27 years old now. I raised her on my own. To get to this first encounter, I kind of have to paint the picture a little bit. I'm an avid hunter, but I'm an avid still hunter. What that means is I like to be by myself, do my own thing in the woods. In South Mississippi, we have two dog hunting seasons. And when I say dog hunting, it's not hunting dogs, it's actually where they use hounds to kill deer. I've tried it before, not a very big fan of it. It's very dangerous. When them two seasons kick in, I have to usually go to either some private land or any wildlife management area. We call it a WMA. What I have in my house is called Leaf River Management Area. That is where this took place. I'm going to paint the picture a little bit more clear for you. It's very remote. It's about an hour and a half away from my house. Very well taken care of. A lot of game wardens. If you go in there, it's very strict in there. You go in there, you're going to get checked. They're going to make sure that you're good before you go in there. Where I was hunting, there was this ryegrass plot, huge, huge ryegrass plot. It was probably about 100 yards wide and about 1,000 yards long, probably, in between quarter and half a mile long. It was long. And there was power lines that was running adjacent to it, north and south. Deer in Mississippi are very smart because of the hunting pressure. A lot of hunters would get on that field and hunt. That particular day, there was nobody out there. But usually people get right on the field to hunt. They get up a tree or whatever, or have a ground blind or anything like that. Deer are smart. They know, when they come to eat out on the field, they wait till it's, nighttime. They know the hunters are not in the woods. So what I would do is I would go down the power lines and get about 200 yards behind that field. It was kind of like a corridor. I was always successful because right before dark, I would catch the deer slipping across the power lines, making their way to that field. They'll make their way to that field and they'll just sit. And then as soon as it's dark, they'll go out there and eat. I was in the Army for 13 and a half years. I learned about ambush and stuff like that. So that's what I did. And I hunted this spot for years and years and years, James. Even when I was a little kid, me and my dad hunted this spot. It was a normal day. Normal day, nothing out of the ordinary. This time of the year, it's probably getting dark at about 5:30, pitch black at about 5:30 or so. I used to always get up my tree probably around 1 o'clock, get up early, and you get yourself situated. You kind of get your smell out the woods because deer rely on their nose. Deer do not see very good. They rely on their sense of smell. Their sense of smell is like it's like four times better than a bloodhound. Wild pigs, their sense of smell is even more keen than that, but that's a different story. Nothing was different. I got up the tree and just got comfortable, and I'm facing west, and I'm probably about 30 yards the woods east on the east side of the power lines, but I always get up really high in the tree, 25, 30 foot. And the reason I have to do that is because Mississippi, the underbrush is so thick. It's so thick that if you don't get up high, you just can't see anything. It's terrible. Every other year they have to do prescribed burn just to kind of get control of the underbrush. So yeah, it was a normal day and I'm up like 1 o'clock and I noticed there was no kind of action or nothing. Usually throughout the day I'll see a couple deer cross or something like that, something that I don't want to shoot or, it was weird that day. It was like I didn't even see a squirrel or nothing. It was a pretty day. I remember it was cold, but it wasn't overcast or anything like that. The sun was out, sky was blue. I can remember that. I just had absolutely no action. And it gets to be probably about 4:15, 4:30, and I finally hear something behind me, and it sounds heavy, but it's not. It's coming in really slow. Now, I want to say it's almost like it's taking its time coming in, whatever it is. And I thought I didn't know what it was. I turned around and I couldn't see it. It gets pretty close to me, and I'm 30 foot up a tree, and it gets probably about 30 yards to the right of me, stops, and I still can't see whatever it is. I'm still looking. I'm looking over whatever it is, but it's still so thick down there, I cannot see what it is. And all of a sudden, I hear breathing, like almost like labored breathing, like real congested breathing. That went on for about, I guess, about a minute or so, and it stops. So I'm puzzled. I don't know what's going on. I'm thinking it was probably a hog or maybe a big deer that got shot, and I'm hearing the blood in the lungs or something, but I didn't hear no gunshot from anywhere. So, I guess another 10 minutes goes by. I'm just puzzled. What was that? So it gets to be probably about, I guess, about 4:40, 4:45, and it gets to be the time of the day where the sun is, I'm fighting the sun because I'm being blinded. I'm facing west, and the sun is just barely up over the trees. And I had to pull my hat down and put my hand in front of my face to kind of look in front of me just to see if there was anything out there. I didn't see nothing. I'm fighting the sun, trying to see. And in my right peripheral, about 150 yards to my right down the power lines, I see something black. So I had to turn a certain way to get my rifle up to look at it through the scope. Before I put it in the scope, it looked like it was on all fours. So I'm thinking, I thought it was a black bear because, we do have black bear here. We don't have a wide abundance of them, but we do have them. I have picked them up on trail cam before. A lot of times the state, like every 10 years, the state will release some from up north, just to see if they can make it down here. And that's what I thought it was. So I put it in a scope, and the time I get my scope, it's sitting down. It's sitting down on its butt with its legs straight out in front of it, just staring in the same position I'm staring, straight west it's staring, and its left hand is digging in the dirt. And that's when I got a little puzzled at what I was looking at. The first thing I seen was the hair on the back. I'm thinking bear the whole time. I really, I have an expensive scope on my gun, so I bared down on this thing and, really looked at it pretty good. And the first thing that threw me off was the hair. The hair on the back. The hair on the back wasn't what you would think of, like a double undercoat of a dog or even a bear. It was hair. It was like human hair on its back, but long. And you can see through it. You can see the skin through it. It was a dark blue, ashy gray. There was a point where I went up to the head, and the top of the head would look like kind of like a gorilla. Had the conical shape to it, but it wasn't very pronounced. It was there, but it wasn't like, I don't know. You see some pictures of some Bigfoots, and they have the really pronounced, sharp point on top of the head. He didn't have that. It wasn't that pronounced, but it was there like that. I have a million things going in my mind. What is this? Who is this? Is this somebody playing a joke on me? Can't be somebody playing a joke on me because I'm out in the middle of nowhere. Nobody would do this way out here, stuff like that. That's what's going through my mind. I'm starting to think, am I really looking at an ape? Does somebody have a special license around here that have all these exotic animals and maybe this thing got loose. I have all this stuff going on in my head, but I still pretty much I'm thinking bear, you know, maybe I'm just looking at it, you know, at a weird angle and it just looks like that, you know. So I kept him in a scope for a minute, man, and he finally turned his head to the left because the face, I seen a piece of his eye and I seen the side of his nose. I'm looking for a snout, like a bear snout. I did not see a snout. I seen the side of a hooded nose, a black hooded nose, just like us, and one piece of an eye, and the eye was solid black. It was like a shark's eyes, like, you know, like if you see a picture of a great white, that black. And just out of desperation, I yelled at it. I just went, "Hey," you know, but you know, really loud, "Hey!" And when I did that, oh man, I don't know what he did, man. I want to say it happened too fast. I want to say he took and pushed off of his hands onto 2 feet, but it was like it was nothing. It was like no effort at all to do it. It was almost like it was very robotic looking, almost. And that's when he stood up. I could not. I mean, he looked like a Brahma bull on two legs. He was so big. My God, was he big. And still to this day, I don't think he knew I was there because of the way he acted. He starts pacing around in like this 30-yard oblong kind of like little path. You know, he was looking down power lines north and south. He would look my way. He would look west of him, but every now and then he would look my way, but he wouldn't look directly at me. He would look my way, stop, and his eyes would. So I want to say, I'm trying not to leave anything out because a lot happened in a short amount of time. When he popped up on the 2 feet, he screamed. Screamed. It was very loud. It was like being next to a, I always tell people that it's like the difference between like a lion roar or maybe being next to the railroad tracks when you have a freight train going by, you know, that real loud scream, that horn almost like shakes your body. Like being next to a speaker at a concert. And he was 150 yards away. That's a football field and a half. And I still, he rumbled my body when he screamed that first time. So he's looking at me, you know, I don't think he can make out what I am. So again, you know, people say, "You're crazy. Why did you do this?" I waved at him. I said, "I'm right here." When I did that, he walked straight to me. This guy had no fear. You know, you see the Patterson-Gimlin film, you see the Freeman footage, it's always them walking away and you know they don't want to be seen. This guy didn't do that. He came straight to me. He walks to me and I can remember this is where the paranormal stuff kind of kicks in a little bit. He was give or take 150 yards. He starts walking towards me. The way he walked to me was very weird. It was like he was the motion his body was making it almost looked like he was on a pair of snow skis walking to me. That's the motion he was making. You know, his arms were swinging out real wide and in huge steps. And I can remember I seen him. He starts walking to me. I see the way he's walking and it scared me. So I looked down at my gun. I unbolted it just to make sure I had a round in the chamber and I slammed it back shut. Probably about all of about 4, 5 seconds tops. In that amount of time, when I looked back up, he was 30 yards in front of me. Explain that. So this is when I really got a really good look at him. I put him back in a scope. I was looking at him. First thing I noticed was the face. The face, it was crazy, man. It was like you could see the emotions in his face. It was almost like he was looking at me like the same way I was looking at him, like what am I looking at here? You know? I don't think this one probably seen too many humans. But then again, every time he would shuffle a certain way and he would scare me, I would bear down on him like I was fixing to shoot him. And when I would do that, he would turn his head to the side and look at me with one eye. And he was giving me that look like, "Don't you do it. Do not do that." So then again, I think these things know what guns are. This went on. It was pretty much a staring contest for the best of about 20 to 25 minutes. There was a particular time when he did kind of like a yawn kind of thing. His face stretched really wide and he opened his mouth. And that's when I got to see his teeth. His teeth, they were like ours, but much, much bigger. It looked like big square chiclets in his mouth. I remember seeing the inside of his mouth, seeing the his gums. His gums were like dark purple, you know, really dark, dark gums. I'm fighting the sun the whole time. I remember looking at his, there's little things that stick out. When I was looking at his chest and stuff, the hair on his chest was just as long as the hair on his back, but he had no facial hair, none. I mean, he had hair on his neck, almost like he was clean shaved. I mean, there was nothing on his face at all. There was a time when I got to see, I kind of panned down, I got to see his hands. Didn't have long fingernails, but the fingernails were jacked up looking. I don't know if maybe they bite them off. I don't know what they do. It was very surreal, man. For a minute there, I kind of didn't know if I was going clinically insane at the time. But this thing was not going away. It never would get any closer than 30 yards, but it would never get any further back. And there was a dogwood tree that he was next to, and there was this branch that stuck out. And he kept ducking up under that branch, but he wouldn't duck his whole body. He would just like move his head a little bit, just to, you know. And I went back to that dogwood tree recently. That's on my podcast. And that branch is easy 8 foot. So he was probably 8.5, 9 foot. I'm going to say 1,000 to 1,200 pounds he probably was. Getting back to the encounter, a lot has come back to me, little things. There was a time when I was looking at the sun. I was thinking to myself, I have to make some kind of move, because if I don't make a move, I'm going to be in the woods with this thing at pitch black. And I have this tiny little, you know, this tiny little flashlight on the bill of my cap, you know, it's not going to do me any good. I have to do something. I have to get out of here. And there was, like I said, James, there was a few times he would shuffle a certain way and I would bear down on him and he would like look at me weird. He would turn his head to the side. That probably happened 4 or 5 times. At the end, I'm thinking, you know, I have to get out of here. I have to do something. I have to get out of here. I'm going home. Whatever this is, if I don't do something, this thing is going to kill me or something. I don't know what to do at this point. I don't even know if what I have in my hand is even big enough to kill whatever this is. So just out of pure desperation, I put him back in the scope and I bared down on him again. And this time he didn't turn his head to the side. He just was looking at me. I mean, I could see his eyes. I could see his eyelashes. He wasn't really posing a threat. He just looked curious. So I said, I have to do something, though. I have to get out of here. So I bared down on him, and I put the scope right between his eyes, not directly between his eyes, maybe up on his forehead a little bit. And I exhaled, and I went to squeeze off on him, just like we was taught how to shoot in the Army, man. And I got about halfway through the squeeze. I don't know how the gun did not go off. I just stopped, and I couldn't do it. I absolutely, positively could not do it. I tried, and I couldn't do it. I could not shoot this thing. It looked so human in the face. Humanity kicked in. It was like, if I kill this thing, if I blow its brains out, is it going to, you know, is this some kind of people we don't know about? Is this some kind of people that government's protecting? You know, what's going to happen when I get out of here and I go call the authorities? Am I going to go to jail for the rest of my life? These things are people, man. I'm telling you, I've seen it. I'll tell the world. I've seen this thing for a long time, and I keep replaying it back in my head every single day. This is a people. They're a very special people, but they are a people. I'm telling you, they gotta be. So I couldn't do it. I put the gun on the side, and at this point, I don't care what happens. I screamed at him again. I said, "What do you want?" And when I did that, everything changed. That's when he screamed again. It was like a draw it from the gut, and I got to see it from 30 yards away, and I hope to God nobody has to see that. When he screamed, there was so much energy. It was like a draw it from the gut, and when he let it loose, his whole face caved in on top of itself. His face distorted. It's like his face shot. There was so much power. His face shot out probably. His nose and teeth and mouth looked like it went out about 11 or 12 inches, and when he was done screaming, everything sucked back to normal.
You mean momentarily it was convex, it jutted out?
Yes. Wow. Yes. And the power from the screen was just like on the power lines. I can feel the heat off of it. I can remember being like in Iraq, when a bomb would go off a mile away. You're okay because it went off a mile away, but you can still feel the heat off of it. That's exactly how it felt, exactly like that. When I did that, he went back to all fours and ran slap across the power lines to the western side. And a lot of people say, Mike, what did that look like when he was running away? And the way it looked very unorthodox. It looked very lurpy, like you ever see like a Great Dane run, how it's kind of stupid looking? Yeah, that's
Yeah,
what it looked like.
gangly, kind of just loping along, but gangly.
It was just like that, but it was super fast. It looked unorthodox, but it almost looked like it made him faster, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does.
So he gets on the other side of the power lines. I can see like bits and pieces of him at the time. Like every now and then I'll see his head or his shoulders, and he is ripping up gallberry bushes by the roots and chucking them out in the middle of power lines. He's knocking trees down. He's not like knocking down like full grown 30-year-old pine trees, but he's knocking small trees down. And it's like every fifth, about 10 or 15 seconds, he screams. But he's yelling. It was just really weird. It was a lot of grunting, a lot of yelling, and then scream. Grunting, yelling, then scream. But I noticed he was on the other side of the power lines. He got to a point where I couldn't see him anymore, but he was moving further north. So at this time, I'm in my stand. I got my rifle and I'm standing up in my stand. I said, okay, he's going to kill me now. This thing's going to kill me. He's going to circle around or he's going to do something and he's going to kill me. So, I head on a swivel, of course, still ripping it up, but he keeps going further north. And there was a time, I want to say it was probably about where I seen him the first time, but west, he shoots back across the power lines and it just looked like a black flash. Now he's on my side, but he keeps going further north. And there's so many different noises he made that I can't even recreate them. It's impossible. I think these things got a double set of vocal cords. I really do. Because some of the humming and the grunts he was doing was out of this world. So I remember I didn't hear him anymore. And I heard like a fresh tree break, like that snap, crackle, pop, like that ka 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 pa. And I knew that was him probably, but that it was way off. He done gained some ground on me. I said, it's now or never. I got to come out. So I come out the tree. I'm in one of them tree climbing stands where you basically have to sit on the top part and you have to climb. You have to sit on the top part and bring your feet up, bring the bottom piece up with your feet and just keep going up. And it usually takes me to get 30 foot. It probably takes me about 20 of them jacks, foot and a half at a time or whatever it is. I was down in about 10, dude. And yeah, I left my whole book bag. I left hundreds of dollars worth of hunting equipment up the tree in my book bag. I wasn't worried about it. The only thing I made sure I had, I had my gun. I had a sling on it, and I slung that sucker on my back, and I come down that tree. I get to the power lines, and I start running. And I'm running for dear life. And at this time, I was kind of, this is 2.5 years ago. I was kind of a healthy boy back then, a little heavy. So, I'm running as fast as I can, adrenaline, full adrenaline, but I'm getting whooped, I'm out of shape. After about 100 yards, a very fast run went down to a very fast walk. And I stopped because I thought I heard something. I can still hear him back there. Every now and then I can hear him. Yell, I'm starting to get some distance away from him, but I hear something on the side of me, or I think I do. I start running again, and sure enough, there's something on the side of me now, about 30 foot in the woods. I'm on the power line, and it's staying just enough out of sight. The bushes move, but I can't see it, and that really scared me. Every time it would run, when I would stop, it would stop. Sometimes it would take an extra step, so I knew something was there. There's a point on this power line. Let me back up just a little bit, James. I want to say probably from my tree where I was hunting from to my truck was probably 600 yards, maybe. It was a good ways. About 300 yards down this power line coming back, they have this small little plateau that came out. Wasn't very big. I hunted that spot for years. I always called that the halfway point. So I see that coming up, still a ways off. And when I seen that plateau, I'm running. I picked up running. And this thing is just busting through the woods on the side of me. It's moving in closer, but it's still just staying just far enough to where I can't see it. I can see the bushes move a little bit, but I can't see it. But the way the woods are shaped, when I come to this plateau, it's going to have to reveal itself because either that or it's going to have to go further back in the woods. This thing's going to run out of woods here, in a minute. So I see the plateau coming up. This thing is closing in on me, and I finally had enough, and I shot a shot in the air, just straight in the air. 7 millimeter Magnum, it's nothing to play with. That's something that they hunt elk and moose with in the Northwest. It's a good gun. It's a big gun. And when I gun everything, and I kept walking. I got past the plateau. Whatever it was on the side of me was no longer following me anymore. And I remember cresting a big hill. I look over the hill. There's my truck, but it's still a good ways down there. I couldn't see my whole truck. I could just see the roof of my truck. This power line had a lot of hills. Mississippi doesn't have any mountains, but we do have a lot of hills. I finally get to my truck. It seemed like it took me no time to get there after that. When I seen my truck, I caught another gear I didn't know I had. I get to my truck and I got a voice in my head, my conscience saying, "Mike, get in your truck, get out of here. Don't be curious. Get out of here and go and never come back." I got my truck, and as soon as I stuck my key in the door, I heard one last scream, and it was way back there, way, way, way back there. And it wasn't like the other screams, nothing like it. It was like, it was all, I want to say it was sounded like the crack of a whip or almost like a baboon screech. I get in my truck. This road that I come in on, you go down 2 miles and it makes a cul-de-sac and you can pass back through. I wasn't passing back through. I backed up in a ditch, just about got my truck stuck. That would have been wonderful. I got out. So I'm going down these dirt roads and I'm flying, dude. Every left and right hand turn, the ass end of my truck is swinging around. I probably almost wrecked several times. I finally catch blacktop and I get down Highway 26 and I'm going as fast as my truck can go. I don't know how I didn't get pulled over. I finally catch 15 back down to the coast. I don't remember a whole lot after that. I do remember getting home, throwing my gun on my bed, and this is wintertime, it's in the 30s, which is cold for Mississippi. I remember getting in the shower and just putting it on full blast cold and laying in the fetal position for about an hour. I remember waking up and no, I remember passing out on the couch and waking up, and I thought it was all a dream. I thought it was a bad nightmare. That's what I thought it was. I got up, went to my room, and sure enough, my rifle was sitting there on my bed. And I was like, "Well, I guess it wasn't no dream, was it?"
The duration of your encounter, for one thing, the duration, the ability to zoom in on the face, see the expressions, see the convex nature of the shape when it let out that yell, and you would feel these screams down to your bones. Is that what it was like?
It was almost like I was holding on to a jackhammer. You know how
Oh,
the Yeah.
reverberates in your chest.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. These things have some that these things have, and to add to this story a little bit, it scared me. I own a business, okay? I have a vending machine business, and I didn't go back to work for like a month after that. I couldn't. I just couldn't get it out of my mind. It took me months and months to even just, I didn't even know what I seen. I didn't know if it was some kind of demon or if it was, I didn't know what it was. I mean, I know what it was now.
What was the date of this encounter?
This was December the 16th, 2020.
Oh, geez. It's not even, oh, just
Little bit over 2 years ago.
a little bit over 2 years.
Yeah. I did, I want to say after about 6 months, 5 months maybe, I started really looking into it and just YouTube, stuff like that. I didn't know what I seen until I think I watched a Patterson-Gimlin film again. That thing's all over the place on YouTube. I think I looked at that and I was like, wow, that's what it was. Because you got to remember, before this happened to me, I didn't know I remember seeing the Patterson-Gimlin when I was a kid, but I just thought that was something that they put on TV to, that everybody was saying that was a hoax. They used to come on late night TV back in the 80s. I thought that was just something to scare people. I didn't know that was real at all. I've never been a shallow person. I've always believed in like ETs and stuff like that. Like you said earlier, programmed on the left side, on the left hand side of my brain. We were taught as kids, all this is bull crap. The boogie down here, but they call them boogers. And I can remember when we was kids, they would say, when it gets dark, get out the woods because the boogers are out there. The boogeyman's going to get you. I didn't know that that's a real thing, that that's Sasquatch. Well, I mean, I know now.
It's a paradigmatic shift, big time, because similar to what happened to me, where all the years I went to school, no one tells you that space aliens come into your bedroom at night and kidnap you. I mean, you would think somewhere along the line someone would tell you something like this is possible, right? And then when you find out the hard way that, well, these things do happen. And I think for me, the hardest thing to wrap my mind around was, why did it have to happen to me? Right? There's billions of people on this planet, right? It's like, why single me out?
Well, exactly, man. And it was almost, I didn't know what to tell people. I was so afraid of ridicule. How do I go to my friends and say, look, I was hunting at Leaf River and I seen this 8 to 9 foot gorilla walking on two legs, but not really a gorilla. More human looking in the face. I mean, who's gonna they would everybody would have laughed at me. But now you told the world, I don't care what people think now. My message from God is to get my story out. So as far as ETs, now that's a whole different rabbit hole, but I can go down. Have you ever heard of Robin Haynes McCrae?
No, please enlighten me.
She's been in the Bigfoot world for a minute now. She's more on the paranormal side of them instead of just straight flesh and blood, She seems to think, and I kind of agree with her a little bit, that in this encounter, I had some missing time. Because I'm going to go back to the encounter. Whenever I go, I always get up the tree really early. And this happened probably around 4:15 to 4:30. So I get up the tree at 1. There was no action, but it seemed like there was no time at all. And it happened, if that makes sense.
You mean from the time you shimmied up there at 1 p.m. till 4 p.m. rolls around when all this stuff starts to happen? It seems like whammo, suddenly hours have passed.
Yes, it seems like I sat down, I got comfortable, and I'm like, wow, nothing's going on really much. And then all of a sudden, I hear this thing behind me. And here it is, 4 o'clock. I didn't realize it at the time. But thinking back, I'm like, that there's not a whole lot I can recall in between 1 o'clock and 4:15 when I heard it.
That is interesting because being a combat veteran, you're acutely tuned into your environment, so
Exactly.
you are very aware of what's going on around you. And you also stated at the outset that there was a strange, almost a vacuum stillness where, and this is described by many people prior to the onset of an experience where they don't hear anything. They don't hear birds chirping. They don't hear the normal background sounds that you would expect in a
Yes.
forest.
And there was another part when I shot my gun in the air and everything got quiet, and I don't know if it was because of my gun, but it seemed like it got so quiet, like so quiet, that you could cut the air with a butter knife. It was crazy. I mean, it was almost like elemental too. It was like everything stopped. It was almost like the wind stopped. Everything stopped. The first time I told my encounter, this is another freaky thing. The first time I told my encounter was on Wes Gehrman's show on Sasquatch Chronicles. And that was probably about a year and a half ago, or a year and 4 months ago, when I first broke my story. And I have recently listened to the story and what I know now, and a lot has come back to me that I did not talk about in his show. I couldn't remember as good. They say when you have something traumatic, James, this wasn't like any kind of regular fear. I've seen the worst of the worst, okay? I did 4 tours in Iraq. I've seen dead kids. I've seen families inside of a house, just straight black charcoal from an airstrike. I've seen the worst of the worst, and I was scared to death out there. Make no mistake about it. But I had people with me. If I'm going to die, I'm going to die with my brothers out there. This was different. This was more of a primal fear. This was like there was something he was doing that scared me. Something's coming back to me. He was doing something almost like he was grinding his teeth. His mouth was closed, but his jaws, like I guess the ball part of the jaw, it was like a bubble. It was like if you take a piece of bubble gum and you blow it and suck it back in and then blow it out and suck it back in. That's what the top of his jaw was doing. Very strange.
Even if this force is unseen, if you can't even see it, experience it in some other way, somehow the local environment is affected. Somehow you wind up in this scenario where you have a vacuum stillness. The normal rules of physics seem to have been shunted aside momentarily. When you mentioned that you shot the gun and then the stillness was such that you could have cut it with a knife. So something had affected the local area. And also when you described him moving extraordinarily fast on all fours, the gangly kind of lope that he had. But also prior to that, when suddenly you look up and he was 30 meters away from you, 30 yards, it was like somehow that intervening space was just taken up instantly.
It was very strange, and the way he was walking on 2 feet towards me, it looked like he was joking around the way he was walking. Like his arms were swinging up way too high, and the steps he was taking was just ridiculous. They were like, it was like,
Exaggerated.
tw yeah, like t 10 foot. Each step, like 10 foot. And the whole time he was standing up, he never locked his knees out either. Like we do, like
Yeah.
we can stand up. He always had a little bend to his legs, to his knees, the whole time.
Huh.
There were some things that happened, encounters that didn't happen on mine, like the smell. I never got the smell. You know, they always talk how they have a very distinct, disgusting, make you want to
Oh,
throw up kind of,
yeah.
so bad it like hurts your nose. I never got that. Maybe that is something they use for defense. Maybe that's a gland or something that they, I'm not sure what that is. The lips was not big at all, but the mouth itself was gigantic. When he did that yawn, you can stick a whole cantaloupe in his mouth, no problem. Maybe even a small water, you know, like the little seedless watermelons. You can stick
Wow.
the whole thing. It was big. The teeth too. The teeth were, they were square like ours, but more like square like horse teeth, but even bigger than that. It was like big square chiclets in his mouth, but he didn't have bad teeth. I always told that, you know, these things have, you know, their teeth are usually jacked up looking, and they usually have the fangs. I see no canines in his mouth. Now, maybe he had them and they were broke off. I'm not sure, but I didn't see any like canines or nothing like that. No pronounced incisors or anything like that. It was just normal square block teeth.
Hold that thought, Michael. We've reached the end of the first segment, and this has been fascinating. And we're going to dive into all the other insights you've gleaned over time. How can people find your channel on YouTube? Well, what's it called?
My YouTube channel is Red Creek Mafia 777. Now, the 777 is biblical. I'm the only Red Creek Mafia that I know of on YouTube. I am trying to grow my channel, so thank you for letting your people know about it, James.
Also, you can be found on Facebook. Do you want to give your Facebook information?
Absolutely. Facebook, it's just Michael. No, on Facebook, it's just Mike. And then Bleuler, it's Bleuler. And also on Twitter and on, yeah, just Twitter, I have Red Creek Mafia 7.
For our dear listeners out there, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.